I am Dan Black.
So I have to start with something kind of fun, which is I want to know what every one of those colorful buttons that were facing me on stage last night. I want you to go through all 3,000 colorful buttons.
Okay.
And tell me what every
flashing lights.
Yes, I want to know what all the colorful buttons. You know, they could be all the Dan Black and the colorful buttons.
So most of them are, you know, if I push that button, it means I don't fall asleep. If I push that button, I don't run off the stage in terror. If I push this button, I don't say something offensive. You know, they're generally there to control me and make sure I focus on the show. I've got a lot of wayward compulsions forever swimming within inside me.
There would be a perception reality of what to expect from Dan Black on stage. And we're going to get into a lot of
okay.
that. Okay. Because people would expect different things, you know, hearing the record, I would imagine.
I guess. I mean, it's difficult for me to know. Obviously, I'm me. I'm in the hurricane, so I know what I do and don't do, so it's hard for me. I don't know. You'll have to enlighten me on what people's expectations, having heard the album, would be for a live show.
But what I'm really interested in is a little revisionist history.
Okay.
Some of the things that you want people to know about
okay.
that aren't written in the bio, which is, of course, well-crafted, that the interviews, you know, so what some of the stuff that will really help inform people about you and your music that's more interesting to you.
Things that have never been revealed? You mean?
Well, that's up to you. You can either go for the deep dark.
I mean, obviously, I have trawled my past in many an interview, so it's difficult for me to think what have I been keeping. I guess the things I haven't mentioned, maybe I didn't want to say. Born north of England, moved south of England straight away. Grew up in tiny village outside London, green, very middle class, boring. Music. Mugged me in an alley and wouldn't leave me alone. Father, who is a music nut, surrounded by records, and someone with crazy religious passion for music, the myth of music, all that kind of stuff. Tricked parents into paying for me to leave village, go to London to study in quotation marks, while I just spent the whole time inflicting myself on different bands and whoring myself across the city trying to get any musical experience thing going I could, in varying crazy bands, in a not much often mentioned, in a band called Minty, which was led by Lee Bowery, crazy performance art thing, which was very much in at the deep end. I was, you know, 18, stood at the back quietly playing guitar while simulated births and people hanging upside down with naked smashing through glass, etc. was happening. That was kind of a baptism of fire. Then started many bands more seriously, and Servant happened, which is kind of my first main big project. That turned into something I didn't like, so I jettisoned everybody, became solo.
Was Servant truly a band, or was it still Dan Black with other musicians?
It started as just me, in a similar thing that I'm doing now. Computers had just about become cheap enough and clever enough to be able to do music in them, and I was like, wow, this is the future. And I started to do that, and I started making tracks which were similar but a lot more kind of inelegant versions of what I'm doing now, and got some guys in to help me play live, and they sort of, I still had, you know, was what's the word, enamored with the idea of the four men against the world cliche of an English rock band or whatever. So, and they were obviously very motivated to do it, so it sort of turned into a band, and their input increased, but they wanted to play their instruments, and they sort of pulled it, and I was complicit towards a sort of more alternative rock world, which was kind of fun but ultimately a bit underwhelming for me. So yeah,
that's a great segue to the next question.
Okay.
But it is intriguing to me that you've made a dance record that does appeal to that indie rock alternative crowd.
Sure.
It's still cool enough. So when you were making the record, I know you had no predisposition, but obviously what I want people to understand is that there's a lot of other music in you that they might not you know, on this first record they're going to hear one thing, but there's lots of things to come, right?
Sure. In terms of future music?
Well,
or
yeah,
in terms
but,
of...
but let's talk about the album now. When you set out to write these songs,
well, it's, yeah.
you know, you didn't say, oh, well, I'm going to make a dance record, I'm going to make an alternative record, I'm going to make a... You know.
Well, the name of the album is Un, right?
Right.
And there's varying reasons why I call it that, but one of the reasons, in English, if you put Un before a word, it's not that. And a lot of the time when I was making things, if it started to stray strongly into satisfying a genre, i.e. it started to sound very electro or very rock, I would pull away and I'd sort of undo what was... I'd go back a few steps to kind of keep it sort of floating in this kind of limbo between different places. Hence, it's kind of un-rock, un-hip-hop, un-pop, un-cliché, I was trying to be something that was equidistant from all these kinds of things. So, yeah, when we talked about me being in a band before and it got to a place where I wasn't very happy... And a lot of what happened was I'd come in, you know, come on the tour bus or come into, you know, a rehearsal and go, oh, why don't we, you know, excited by something. And so often it'd be like, oh, no, I don't know, it's rubbish, that's not cool, that's not what we do. So when I began, I was like, right, all the things that were, you know, all those doors that had been locked, I was like, open all the doors and then let's just see, you know... I spent a winter writing and I just, I wanted to... things that even I was a bit like, can I pull this off? Just be really as free as I possibly could be and try things, you know, make an idiot of myself. There's, you know, some of the things I attempted didn't work and I couldn't pull off, but I wanted to just, it's kind of impossible, but try not to be too, you know, worried about, is this cool? Is this just being more about like, well, I like this kind of thing and I'm attracted to this kind of thing. I want to try and cover myself in this thing and try and make something that's from this mineral or whatever.
One of the quotes that I read that is one of the uns that you use is unrubbish. So how did you define for yourself rubbish and what was not rubbish? Were there some filters that you put yourself through? Because you said there were some things that were not
sure.
So where did the rubbish
where
the
did unrubbish appear
filter
from?
Find its way to all of this?
I guess, well, it's probably the opposite. You're trying to find things which are extremely not rubbish, things that are really, you're like, wow, this is brilliant. If that feeling wasn't happening, then... But what causes that is quite difficult to articulate. And there's definitely a feeling that most of the creative part of a song happens really fast. And I work within machines and sort of anything that's organic, i.e. singing or instrument, tends to come slightly later. So I'm exploring for things, but that whole process happens relatively quickly in terms of the kernel of the idea. And that's also the thing I mainly do. All this is for those moments when something comes together and you go, wow, this is so amazing, I love this. Where did this come from? How did this happen? And that's quite a rare thing, but that's the thing you're chasing for. So you look for that. If that thing doesn't happen and you're like, oh, this is kind of good, you let these things go by, which is sometimes quite hard because you think, well, no, this is really, you know, competent and not rubbish, but it's not. So not rubbish is sometimes not really enough. It's got to be even more.
And you did this in the cellar, so you played everything, right?
Yeah. Yes, it was... But foolishly, maybe, I chose to, having, as I said, been in many bands and many situations when a lot of what I felt I had been involved in was ultimately a kind of a compromise between a group of people, as opposed to everybody with the same vision and getting close to that vision as possible. So, and also, you know, working, I used the analogy before of it being a bit like painting. I mean, when working with producers and engineers and other musicians, it always feels a bit like you're painting a picture and then you... Or someone else is holding the paintbrush, or you hand that paintbrush to someone else, and it's like, and you still stand there going, "You put some paint in it." It's like, just give me the paint. It's just easier for you to be directly touching the thing you're making. So, but it's a lot of work making records. So yes, I did, and the only way I seem to be able to work is to work in a very intense sort of wake up, just crawl across the room to the machine. Start working, suddenly realise it's now midnight or 2 a.m, think we'd better eat something, fall asleep, wake up at do that again and again for maybe the worst one was 30 days straight. And I do start to slightly go insane and become, I can remember like meeting friends dragging me to at least go and have a coffee and not be in that room for a minute. And me, I can really distinctly remember seeing their face, sort of them looking kind of ashen-faced and wide-eyed as I sort of turned the corner towards them. And I guess, you know, long-haired, bearded, skeletal, wide-eyed, wild-eyed, maybe.
I think you had that sample on your record. Did you hear that? I think that was on track number 4,
wasn't it? Yeah.
That was
probably
fabulous. Sounded just like someone's... Did you hand the label the record and say...
There you go.
It's produced, it's mixed, here we go.
Yeah, pretty much. There was... You know, it's a major label, so I was expecting, okay, this is going to come, there's going to be a price here, and they're going to be really... But fortunately, one, I was in another country, so... And yeah, they were incredibly great. I don't think there was anything that was handed in and that they questioned at all. No, I mean, yeah. So yes, ostensibly. There was some discussion, obviously there was a big bag of material, and it was like, well, what are we going to put on this record? And there was a bit of what songs should be fully... brought to fruition, but in terms of how that would happen, I was pretty much left to my own devices.
That symphony song,
yes,
had quite the interesting tale behind it.
Sure.
So, is there any way to frame it differently, or should we just talk about the fact that song has gone through a rather painful battle?
Painful is a good
to
word.
Get out there.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, it's annoyingly not quick story to tell, but. The key points being that, yeah, when I began the record, I did these funny mashup-y... There was lots of things I wanted to try and make music like, and instead of just doing songs inspired by, I thought, well, I'll just physically put these songs together, sing other songs on top, just to see if there's a way of combining these not obviously related kinds of music into some new sort of Frankensteinian monster. So, and one of these things was... initially was called Hypnotize, and I took the lyrics from the Notorious B.I.G.'s Hypnotize, wrote a melody to it over sort of chopped up elements from a soundtrack to a film called Starman, from sort of sci-fi 80s film, with the drum beat from Rihanna's Umbrella. So kind of very disparate bunch of things, and this thing sort of took on a life of its own. I ended up putting it on my MySpace page, and it's one of those cliche blog blah 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 things, and it had a real life of its own. Ended up being thought, let's do it as a single. So unfortunately, the Notorious B.I.G.'s estate said, you can't use the lyrics, they don't let anyone use any stuff. I said, god damn it, I'm not going to let this thing beat me, so I wrote I'm going to write my own lyrics and re-record it, and those lyrics are symphonies, and they are about how I was in that very moment of like, whatever. I'd finished the album, I'd felt like I'd sort of stripped myself down to this lean almost skeletal figure who'd only had one mission in life, and which I sort of talk about, and I was like, when in this the narrative of my life, in the film of my life, when will those big symphonic strings kick in? And it's like, and now he's reached the moment of the film where the thing we wanted to happen happens. And so it was painful, but ultimately quite a productive journey.
It actually worked because it became, it's gone places, so it was a good journey to get there,
really.
Right?